Okay. Okay, let's get going today. Welcome. Another beautiful winter day in California. Hope everybody's enjoying it. Just a few things. We're going to get started pretty quickly. But does anybody have any questions about previous lectures, something that I might have overlooked or not described correctly or having trouble understanding? If you ever have a question, you know, send me an email. I'll be happy to answer any questions. I want to make sure that you understand everything that's going on. Team formation went successfully. I would like people who have formed a team to grab one of these evaluation forms and tell me how that went for you, and also you can use that form for evaluating the guest lecturers today. And that's pretty important because, you know, I try to make things better every year, and I don't know what to make better unless I know what doesn't work, what isn't working. So please let me know. And if there's anything that needs fixing, I'll try my best to fix it. Okay? But I have to know about it. Okay. People who haven't provided a name for their team, please get that to me. Think about that. Think about a name for the project. And if you're building a device, you want to name the device as well, because that makes it really easy to refer to. So that shouldn't be too hard. Room 36, as you saw on the attendance sheet, there's a space for you to sign up for a room 36 pass for doing projects in this class. If you're unsure whether or not you're going to need it, I would suggest that you say no for right now, and if you decide you need it, I can set you up later time. If you already have a PRL pass, then that room 36 pass is included in that, and you should say no on the form. If you have any questions, ask me. And this is from Marlo's slides. So with this information, I'll send it to Marlo and get you all passes with your name. And the next thing you should do is sign up at this website and go through a safety training and check out the place. It's really neat. And that may be a way of, if you understand what you can do in room 36, then maybe that can direct the course of your project. You can see what kind of facility it is, what materials are available, what tools are available for you to use. And the people over there are very friendly. Marlo's very friendly. If you have any questions over there, you can ask her or other people that are involved. As of this year, they also have an electronics area with Arduinos, so if your project involves some of that stuff, you can get those materials there and get it. There's somebody there that will provide expertise on that as well. Okay. So on Thursday, we're going to have a student panel of students here at Stanford with a disability. We lined up two or three folks, so that ought to be pretty interesting. They're going to come and describe themselves and how they become so successful and how they're getting along at Stanford with their disability and what technology they use to be successful. So I guarantee that it will be very interesting. But today we have a doubleheader, and I'd like to bring up to the podium first Doug Schwant, who's going to talk about his career. He worked with me at the VA, and now he's on his own. So let me read his bio sketch. Okay, don't get embarrassed, Doug. Doug began his career at the rehab engineering with a student design project in ME 210, and he designed a hand bike, which he talked about. I remember that very vividly because that was like over 30 years ago. And I first arrived, yeah, that's the first. So it's a two-wheeled bicycle for individuals with lower limb disabilities. And after he graduated, he continued development of the hand bike as well as designing other devices at the VA, the Rehab R&D Center, including working me on fingerspelling hands, the hypogravity devices, which you'll hear more about this afternoon, and specialty cycle ergometers. Doug has also consulted on exciting and challenging projects outside of the VA, including exercise concepts for long-term space travel, MRI-compatible fixtures and mobility devices, and robots for physical therapy. Although he's no longer at the VA, Doug continues to work with universities and companies as a freelance consulting design engineer and part-time as a springboard diving coach, where he has to go right after this. His recent consulting projects include working with Kinea Design on the DARPA prosthetic arm with haptic interface and contributing to the development of the award-winning M300 series anti-gravity treadmill device at AlterG, which we'll hear about later. So a warm welcome back to Doug Schwandt.
Thank you.
Let me get your slides up.
Hi, everyone. So, oh, there we go.
That's your water.
Oh, thank you. Might need that. So, let's see. I titled my presentation Design Challenges in Assistive Technology because I just wanted to show a few examples of the projects I've worked on and a few of the way I've looked at it as each one as a challenge. My talk will comprise just a quick example of the design process, which I continually refer to anytime I get a new project, how big, no matter how big or how small. I always go back to this process that I learned here as a student, as Dave said, 30 years ago. Of course, I was only 10 years old at the time. So, I collected a few little quips that I use to kind of keep my projects in perspective and to keep them fun and to keep me going when things get a little bit tough. And I thought I would just share that with you, plus just introduce to you a few of these projects that David mentioned. So let's start with the design process. Has anybody seen this sort of thing before, made a little list of... Yes. Does it look familiar? So I could just read through it, I guess. The need, there's always the controversy about, as a designer and as an engineer, as an inventor, you usually have ideas and you want those ideas, clever ideas, you think, you want those ideas to be able to help people or make a product. But then what you're told more often is you really need to find the need first and then let that define your solution. But I'd say you're free to go either way, and I've come up with little ideas that I set aside and then didn't use for 20 years. So it could go either way. But you really do need to know what the need is and continue to go back to it to make sure you're meeting it. Also, on my projects and other projects I've seen, especially student projects that I've coached on, students will ignore what's happened before for the same idea. I want to reinvent it. I don't want to be confused about what people have done before in the past. I don't want it to stifle my creativity. But it's very important to look at what's been done before, and it makes you a tougher designer because you'll start to see things that you thought you were going to do and someone's already done it. It'll help you, but you put your ideas and what you see together and you'll go beyond that. The conceptual phase, I think, is the most fun. That's when you can sit down and think about the ideas. And typically, the solutions to problems come to you when you're biking or in the shower, or you just wake up, you're just going to sleep. You go to sleep worried about a project and you wake up with an idea, a solution. And I think that's the most fun. And then actually making little models of these ideas is a lot of fun too. But you typically you have more than one solution to a project. to a problem, and you need to choose one or two to work on because you can't be doing everything at once. So there's always that process of selecting the concept, and you'll find in your probably in your design courses that there are all kinds of tools, and I'm not sure I can even name them, like PERT diagrams or matrices of one form or another that can help you. But what I've found is you go through that process, but in the end, you use your own intuition to make the decision. That's just my choice. You may hear that differently from the professors. Of course, you go through then the process of actually doing the detailed work analysis, making the prototypes, and then I put in here, don't give up, because usually around at several points in a project, you'll find that you just feel like, there's no hope. It's either too big a project, you found something that's not going to work. But that's usually shortly after that, if you really keep at it, is when I've found that I've had the little aha moments. And I should emphasize at this point that these aha moments are kind of fun when you think of them yourself, but most of the time it comes from your interaction with a teammate. And I want to emphasize that these projects that I've been involved with that are the most successful were successful because there were several people coming together to bring their ideas and their backgrounds together to make things work. So the rest of it is pretty self-explanatory. You just go through the process. The technology transfer can be the most difficult part. And I think today, I'll just show a quick slide of an early part of the G-trainers, the Alter G's G-trainers, the prototypes for those. There were probably 15 years. When did Alter G start? Do you know? 2005. Okay, so the first patentable idea was in 1989. So there was like 15 years of development work. But now it's a very successful product. Okay, these are just a few little quips. Don't need to belabor all of them. Of course, this first one involved the client through the design process. I found that instead of going out and surveying people with the same disability and just asking everybody what they want, I found one or two people with a particular disability that I was interested in serving that had enough interest in the project and could express their needs carefully enough that I just basically worked with them and got as close as I could to the final product instead of spending a lot of time with traditional marketing. It's good to just keep fluent with your tools. It's been a long time since I've been in school, but occasionally I'll sit in on classes and I study the SolidWorks, do the tutorials. I'm constantly learning the new tools. I go back to my notes from college. Even all these years, I can't find some things even in the current literature or Wikipedia I find from professors I learned years ago. So keep it with you and you'll refer to it. One of my favorite expressions is I used to go visit our machinist at the VA when I was particularly discouraged by a project that might have been going on for a year or so. It's just going on and on and people are rushing you to finish it. It's a big project, and I'd walk into them, and I'd say, I can't take any more of this. It's going to another month. And he always say, Mount Everest has climbed one step at a time. And it really helped. And I'm like, okay, one step. I'll go back to my desk at least. And another thing that was kind of fun, and this comes up regularly, is this never enough time to do it right and always enough time to do it over again. Well, you really want to get things done, if you can, under budget and on time. But what you'll find is, just keep this in the back of your mind, you'll like work really hard to meet a deadline, and then for some reason it doesn't quite work, or maybe it works, but you don't get quite what you want, and then you'll find that people who are in a position to maybe fund a project or to lead a project will just start a whole new project again. It can happen, or it iterates, like this pressure project went through several iterations with research funding and development funding, And then as a product, it's gone through three iterations already. Okay, so let me just skip forward and show this first slide. So this machinist that I was talking about is over here on the left. This is Jim Anderson. He's retired now, but he was highly trained journeyman experimental machinist from Ames. And the main point of this slide, you've seen the Ralph in here before. You've seen this. Okay. So I wanted to emphasize how important it was to have a team. Jim did the machining and the fabrication. Dave, it was Dave's project. He did all of the smart product design, the electronics, and then I worked on the mechanical part of it. And I think it was a successful project because of the teamwork. So now I'll just show two or three of the projects that I've worked on over the years. The hand bike, has anybody heard of the hand bike before? Dave's, some people have. Has anybody ridden it? Dave hasn't. I actually have one. I'll bring it in sometime if I can to the class if there's a
celebration last day.
Yeah, it's kind of fun because it's a little bit of a challenge to ride. So the hand bike, as you might imagine, is intended for people with lower limb disabilities. And I think the exciting thing about the hand bike is that it's intended to be ridden on two wheels. So if you've lost the use of your legs, from paralysis or CP or spinal cord injury, or incomplete spinal cord injury, we were thinking it would be a lot more fun to ride a bike than a tricycle if you could, because of the feeling of moving when you're on a bicycle. So the bikes have gone through different phases of commercialization. I've lost touch with it a little bit. There's a company, last time I looked, a company called Mobility Engineering, it's the last one listed here, we're selling them out of the Tri-Cities of Washington. And I should move ahead since I'm taking a little longer than I thought. This just shows a sequence of prototypes that we went through, and there were even more beyond this. Went from foam core to the one up here on the left is just foam core. This is my older brother and I in Oregon spent a weekend cutting up old bikes and welding them together so that we could ride that first one. This is Peter Axelson. Will he be visiting? Yeah, you'll meet Peter Axelson. He's really the father of the hand bike. He's the one that came to us and said, let's do a bicycle, let's do a cycle. And you'll meet him later in the course. We raced the bike, set a world record speed at the Human Powered Speed Championships. The guy that's over on the right was involved in a project at the University of British Columbia. He's Rick Hansen. Years ago, he pushed his wheelchair through multiple countries, pushed around the world, basically. He was famous at the time. Then we also did a tandem version, or a couple of tandems. One, the top one is essentially a hand bike with an upright bike attached to it. And then we did what we call the Sunburst Tandem, which is an arm and foot-powered front end and a foot-powered back to it. And I don't know if to introduce Paul and Sachiko are here. They actually came to us at a time and said, where could we get one? And now there's a company called Belenki Cycle Works, and they're... should pass this around. Thanks. So they were able to get a tandem, and they ride it over at the Baylands at Shoreline. So you might want to talk to them about that. Okay. Just a quick touch base on another. This is more of a disabling environment. So able-bodied people leave Earth and the higher gravity here on Earth to go into space, of course, and they're floating around in space, but they need to exercise because muscles atrophy. Your muscles and your bones decalcify, so you need to exercise. It's very important. So what would be the problem? What's the problem with exercising in space? Anybody? Can you think of what would be the most, if you're going to design something to exercise in space, what's the... Yes, exactly. Lifting weights against gravity, or what's another form of resistance that you could think of? Yeah, your body weight, exactly. And in space, you don't have that. What could you use instead of body weight in space? That's close to that. But acceleration, right? Yeah, you have to accelerate your own body mass, but that wouldn't be much. And there's a problem with devices which store energy. If you wind up a bunch of springs or push against the spring, there's a chance that you've loaded the spring, and if you let go at the wrong time, you've got energy that has to dissipate. You don't want any injuries in space. Nothing like, don't turn a flywheel up probably too fast, because if it gets loose, it could do some damage. So what we decided to work on was to use one part of your body against the other by means of ropes and pulleys and harnesses. So this device, it had a foot plate with pulleys. It has an instrumented pulley that it's a little hard to see it, but it's up in here. So the pulley can measure the motion and it can measure the force. And this one guy here flew on one of the space shuttle missions and took it along with them, and he was able to do a 1,200-pound leg press in space, one leg against the other, and the whole thing weighing like 4 or 5 pounds. I think I'll just... Any questions about that one? Or yes, go. Okay, I'll just touch on this one briefly. This is a fairly expensive robotic assist for physical therapy. It's called the Kinney Assist. It's still on its way into production, maybe because it is kind of expensive. But it essentially is a cart with omnidirectional wheels and a special mechanism that can follow you around if you've had a stroke or Parkinson's or something that affects your walking. It weighs several hundred pounds, but it has little sensors in the harnesses that if I move, this thing would follow me around like those dragon tails on that old cart, that TV show. Just follow you around, and you feel like 1 pound of force, even though it weighs several hundred pounds. It can catch you when you fall. It completely allow you to move freely if you want until you lose your balance. This is actually meets some of the needs of the G trainer, which you'll see when Jake explains that. Should we show the video?
Yeah, well, it's up to you.
Maybe just a few seconds of it, okay. So I don't want to take too much of Jacob's time. Okay. So this is a prosthetic hand for someone who's lost the use of lost their arm, basically. Has anybody heard about this arm? I think I'm not that familiar with the medical part of it, but basically you could turn the sound down. Oh, no, you leave it up. That's fine. Leave it up.
This hand, at this point, is built to perform all of them. And as you see, it even can move between touch the fingers and to the thumb tip in a way that would allow for great dexterity. Here's an example of being able to pick up an object, move it, manipulate it. One can see the potential with this kind of movement.
You can shut it off as soon as it picks up the wrench. And I'll just finish it.
Can't do. A person could use this hand to answer the phone, to feed him or herself, potentially even to get out of bed. Now, this may not seem like much what you're seeing.
I think we could stop.
Imagine being paralyzed from the neck down, not being able to feed yourself.
Yeah. Oh, so we won't. Sorry, you can watch this, the rest of it later if you'd like. He picks up a wrench and manages a wrench that's even falling and can catch it and re-grasp it. This is just an example of a project that was so big and high, it was fairly highly funded by DARPA with designers and engineers all over the world. We're working with people in Switzerland and in the East Coast and all over the United States. Big project, lots of people working together. So I think that's the way most projects are going, whether there's I mean, very small ones, of course, you can do by yourself, but most projects are going to be big, and they're going to be all over the world. You won't even be in, you may not even meet the people you're working with. Any questions? I should probably let Jake. We'll show that. I'll just do a, this is a, one of the later prototypes of the, we call it the differential pressure walking assist. It's a basically a way to lift people while they walk on a treadmill. And I don't want to say too much because I think you'll be discussing how it works. And Jacob will be talking about what it looks like as a product. So that's it.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you. Oh, yeah.
So we'll take a little bit of a break and come back in about 3 minutes. Bye, Doug. If you haven't already done so, please pick up the evaluation form. I'd like to hear what you think about it, and also include any information about your team formation. And if you haven't signed up, be sure to do that. Come up and have a cookie.
Okay, great.
All right, let's get started again. I'd like to introduce Jacob Chung, who has over 12 years of experience in the medical field as a physical therapist and athletic trainer, and is one of only a handful of therapists in the Bay Area that holds certification as a sports clinical specialist. He was on staff here at Stanford in the sports medicine department from 2003 to 2006, treating student athletes that participated in over 34 varsity sports. He was introduced to the anti-gravity treadmill at this time and saw the benefits firsthand with the track athletes and post-surgical patients that use the device in their rehabilitation programs. He currently serves as a clinical specialist for AlterG, which is in Fremont, educating people about all the fantastic applications possible for the anti-gravity treadmill. And he's going to do that for that today. And he's a practicing physical therapist and owns two small private clinics in the East Bay. So let's give a warm welcome to Jake.
Thanks, Dave. I'm excited to be here. As he said, I am a clinical specialist for AlterG. And I started working with the product here at Stanford. That's how I got introduced to it. And I was a physical therapist, athletic trainer in the sports medicine department. And I'm going to talk a little bit about how we used it with those athletes, as well as kind of where the product is moving. I'm going to also talk about how we've evolved the product, since this is an engineering class. I don't want to just talk about patient care, since this is not a physical therapy class. So the reason I handed those brochures out to you is I want you guys to take a look at how beautiful the product looks and kind of how we've evolved it and developed it, because that's part of your role as engineers, right? That's part of what you do in kind of thinking of what's functional for people, you know, what are their needs, what are the needs of the clinicians. So we'll talk about that today. So I've been with AlterG since 2010. They asked me to come on board to kind of share the gospel of the AlterG, to go out and talk about what it does and teach people how to use it, since I had the opportunity to use the very first one. So I go around and I do that, and I also educate people about what we call unweighting or progressive loading. It's a type of treatment theory that we do in physical therapy, and the AlterG is not new in doing that. What's new is the technology and how we do it. So that's what I'll talk about. And then I'll talk a little bit about how I work with the engineering team and the product design team. That team that Doug talked about is very critical in making sure that the product continues to meet needs of the people that you're going to serve. So you might be asking, well, what is an anti-gravity treadmill? What does it do? So Doug mentioned that it uses differential air pressure, and I thought you can just watch the video, and that'll give you an idea of what the anti-gravity treadmill does.
This is such a wonderful machine because you can walk independently. I really appreciate this machine. I mean, it's really made a difference for me.
That's great.
I've never run in my entire life except on this machine. So, weight, joints, on one machine.
UC San Francisco opened its Orthopedic Institute today, a world-class medical facility in the city's Mission Bay.
This is an anti-gravity treadmill developed by NASA. Patients with artificial legs, fractures, and joint replacements can train on it, while the device controls how much weight they're putting down on the treadmill.
As air inflates this bag, Steve Thompson is getting lighter and lighter.
And this is 60%.
He was unable to run for 15 years.
I've seen the first time in 5 years, I'm on 70% less pharmaceuticals than I was 5 years ago.
Steve was the first patient to use the AlterG at the UCSF Therapy Center at Mission Bay.
The reason that I like the body weight with air as opposed to the harness is your upper limbs are free. You can use them. You feel comfortable. You feel like you can run.
Today, the doctors is all new. The biggest and best health trends ever. Unbelievable. AlterG anti-gravity treadmill. What it does, it takes the weight off of your joints so that you can work out hard but with low impact. This is used for people with injuries, for world-class athletes, for really high-level training, but saving your joints.
So what have you done today to make you feel proud?
I'm still struggling with a stress fracture in my leg.
All right, last hand workout.
We're going to put you into our AlterG treadmill.
This is what it would feel like to have 100 pounds taken off.
Exactly.
Wow, it's completely different. It's night and day. It's not even night and day. It's January and June. I can't even feel the pressure off my joints. What would it feel like to have 200 pounds?
Let's see here.
Oh, my God. I want you to run.
You're at 50% of your body weight right now.
Okay. Holy cow. It feels wonderful. It feels where I want to be. You know, I really don't want to go back to be in my body weight again. This is one of the greatest. I love this machine. And it's not just because it's aligned with me. It's telling me what to be.
It is telling you what to be. It's a powerful tool.
All right. So hopefully that gives you an idea of what the anti-gravity treadmill does. But in case you're still wondering, you know, we tell people it's an unweighting device, right? There's a lot of ways that you can unweight someone or unload someone. What we typically do in therapy is we use harnesses. We have someone supported over a treadmill with a harness, or this can actually roll away from the treadmill if they're good enough and they can walk around with the support. Right? We also use a pool, so we can use the buoyancy of water to support someone's weight. So again, the theory behind the Alter-G is nothing new. What's new is the technology. So the Alter-G uses air pressure instead of any of those other things. So just kind of curious, why do you guys think air would be better, or what advantages do you think air would provide? It's compressible. So you don't need a lot of pressure to create a good lifting force, and that's what they discovered with the Alter-G. You just need a very little bit of pressure.
Yeah, it's very abundant and convenient.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So that's very good. Mechanics are normal. Yeah. Yeah, that's one of actually the major benefits of the Alter-G. It's very precise. We have a blower that adjusts the amount of air pressure in there. So we can go from full body weight all the way down to 20% body weight, which is moon gravity. And we can go in 1% increments. So we can figure out exactly where someone's pain-free. We can also, if the doctor says they can't be more than 25%, this is the only product that lets you know that.
I've missed the key physics. Why does increasing the air pressure make you feel lighter?
So... So, the way that works is based on the technology that Doug was working on, and that's called differential air pressure. So when he was at NASA, they used this differential air pressure technology, which had a bag surrounding the person, and so when they filled it, there's pressure inside the bag, and so the pressure inside the bag is greater than what's around you, right? And because you can control it, again, depending on the size of the bag, the material, you know, you can adjust how it feels. It could be very comfortable, again, because it doesn't take a lot. They found that it took only 1.1 PSI to unweight someone about 70%. So that's not very much.
So basically it provides air buoyancy by pressure difference across the waist. So it's pushing up as if you were a cork in a wine bottle around your waist. And it takes just about 2 PSI to across your... section to lift you up from like that. And another thing, I know another answer, if you had surgery in your knee or hip, and you have an open wound or something, using air, it won't get the wound wet. So that's sort of important too.
Yeah, so good. So air provides numerous benefits, and they conducted some tests, they found it was really safe, so then it was good to go apply it to patients. So who's it good for? And so when we initially started marketing Alter-G, if you think about a treadmill, a fitness device, you naturally think people that are going to walk, that are going to run. Those are the people that are going to use the Alter-G. And so we came out with the G-Trainer, which was the first model. Now it's evolved into the P200. But if you think about athletic performance, there's a lot of considerations you have to make. So if you go from this product, right, and you're going to start using it with athletes, then there's some things we have to think about.
I was on the first time with the tent, and another thing was I'm strong, and I was using only one side of the body, but I'm not using my big stomach. So they took the real-time monitor.
Yeah, that's actually very good, because then you could see how much, right, on each side. Yeah.
Did NASA actually use negative pressure to simulate that, to add more weight on a woman's
I think the initial product was for that. And so they went with that first, and then this was the second iteration. Yeah.
Yeah. There was one design that I saw at the VA that was a hemisphere made out of plexiglass that you can actually pump air into it or pull air out of it. And in that case, when you pull air out of it, it's pressing you down against the treadmill.
So is it pressurizing this chamber below the waist, and that's why it pushes you?
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Yep.
Just around the waist is airtight. So
it's airtight. Yep. Yeah.
So the area where your legs are at higher pressure too.
Yep. Correct.
It's only like 16 PSI instead of 14 PSI.
You don't notice it. Yeah. Yep. So the first production units here came out in 2007, and again we had to think about, you know, for athletes, what are we going to do? So if someone that wants to get on here, you know, and use it for rehab after a surgery or after an injury, they're probably going to need to have something where they don't take four or five people to get them in. You want something very comfortable, very safe. We want to think about biomechanics. So someone that's in there running, you know, you look at the back of this bag and it's elevated a little bit. Well, someone has a really big stride, then we have to create that space. Whereas if the bag was sloped or lower, then someone that's running at very high speeds won't be able to have their normal stride. Right, so there's some things that you got to consider. Performance. So this very first unit that we came out with, we put a Woodway treadmill in there. And the reason is the Woodway treadmill goes up to 18 miles an hour. So 18 miles an hour is a sub-4-minute mile. So that's, you know, pretty amazing, but if it's an athlete, that's what they need to do. And some of the first units we sold were to Oregon, to their Nike project, where they train elite distance runners. So they needed that speed. And then some other neat things that we had to kind of adjust and adapt to. One story that Sean likes to tell is they had an investor in this unit, one of the first ones that he was running in it. And he said to them, you know, Sean, it's kind of weird. It kind of starts and stops, and I don't know why. And so he was just running and doing his workout. He's a distance runner, and Sean tried it, and they couldn't get it to start and stop, so they didn't know what was going on. So he put the gentleman back on it the next time he came, and they found out that what happened was he was working on it a lot longer. So he would start to sweat, and his sweat would be flying everywhere, and when it would hit the touch screen, right, the beads of sweat would activate pause or speed up or slow down. So they figured that out by putting him on there, and so they changed the surface for the touch screen, and now it's fine. You can sweat on it all you want. Yeah. So just to kind of illustrate some of those considerations. So another video here. So think about size, right? So you have Mr. over 7 foot tall LA Laker here, and then we've got world class female runners that are probably 5'5", you know, 5'7", 5'9". So that unit actually comes in three sizes, small, medium, and large. So we build the frame differently for different size athletes. For the basketball players, they get a large. Football players usually get a medium, and then runners usually get a small. Okay. So from sports performance, we went into the medical market because people saw the benefits, not just for improving speed and getting someone to run more volume, but for someone to recover from a surgery, if they sprained their ankle, if they had a stress fracture. This was a great way to take pressure off their lower extremities. But with that came a whole host of other considerations. We had to think about what patients, who's going to start getting in there, and what kind of diagnoses, what surgeries would be appropriate, what would not be appropriate. If someone's getting in there with a total hip, what are certain precautions we need to account for? You know, someone can't flex their hip too high, they can't bring it in too far, they can't twist it a certain way. So they have to be able to access the Alter-G without stressing the surgical site. And then lastly, any contraindications. Are there going to be any patients that absolutely can't get in there, that are going to be a no-no? So you go from sports performance to someone like this. So what are some considerations that you guys, if you look at someone like this, what would we have to change to help this person? Any thoughts or ideas? Yeah. Yeah, so to get in the G trainer, it's a pretty high step. It's about an 18-inch step. And then there's this frame that they have to kind of rig into the right levels. So that's one of the things we had to think about is for a surgical patient, they can't step into something that high. We have to have a lower step. Right? Any other thoughts about considerations for these patients? Speed of the treadmill? Yeah, excellent. Yeah. So we had to get a treadmill, a rehab treadmill, that went up in 0.1 mile an hour increments and started at zero. And we had to, for rehab, they don't need to go 18 miles an hour, right? So we have a rehab treadmill that goes 12 miles an hour. Okay. So considerations, as Dave mentioned, were infection risks. If someone has a surgical wound like this, they can't get in a pool. But the nice thing about air is they can still get in there and not worry about it. But then what happens if they sweat, right? Is that a concern? So then we have to take a look at the temperature inside the bag, make sure that doesn't get too hot. What kind of motor are we going to use for the blower, right? Motion, again, for step height. They're not going to be able to bend their knees high, so we need to adapt for that. Strength. So if someone is in pain, can they calibrate? Can they, be there so they can get weighed so we know how much air to blow in there? So it's not like a cork, like Dave said, and we shoot them out the top of the treadmill, right? So that's what we don't want to do. And the very first G trainer, people had to stand on the side of the treadmill to get calibrated because there were sensors on the side of the treadmill. Well, to evolve to the M320, the product that you're going to see, we put the load sensors actually in the floor of the treadmill. So this will show you how to have it get in and out.
Hi, I'm Jimmy. I'm going to show you how to operate the Alter-G anti-gravity treadmill. First thing you want to do is come over, step into the elastic shorts made exclusively for the Alter-G. Once your shorts are on, you'll walk through the back of the Alter-G into the circular cockpit. Bending down, you'll grab the cockpit handlebars, sliding them up to your hips. Once in line with your hips, you will grab the locking mechanism, sliding it into place. You'll find your zipper on your shorts goes in line with the zipper on the bag.
Have you been in one of these? Have you been in one of the new ones?
Going all the way around, creating the seal in the bag. Once the locking mechanism is in place, the seal is created through the zipper. You want to take the safety strap and place it around your wrist. Once you have that completed, you want to begin the calibration process. You want to cross your arms and remain still. You'll feel the air fill up around your waist in the bag. When completed, the green light will go from calibrating to ready. When the green light indicates ready, you may then take advantage of the features of the Alter-G anti-gravity treadmill, beginning with speed. In 0.1 increments, you may go all the way up 12 miles an hour.
We could probably skip the rest.
3 miles an hour in reverse. There's also...
Okay, so I just want to give you an idea of how you get in and out of this unit. And we adapted it so that from the first unit you saw that Andrew Bynum, the basketball player, was using, they have to kind of lock in the two sides. So that's just a one-step process where someone can just walk right in, lift up the frame and lock it, and they don't have to turn around, they don't have to see whether they're lined up, right? So they can just go in, seal themselves, turn on the treadmill, and the sensors again now are in the treadmill floor, and it covers all four corners. So then if someone also was in a lot of pain, they could even just not put the other leg down. They could balance on one foot and calibrate. And then when they're done, they can take the weight off, then put the other foot down, and they can be at 50% body weight where they don't have any pain. So we've adapted it so that these patients and these populations can now take advantage of the air pressure without being too much of a burden for them to get in. Okay. So what about other qualified populations? Who else can use it? We've got a whole host of populations that have kind of grabbed onto the technology, and we've been thrilled, as you can imagine. Late 2010, we got a really great response from skilled nursing facilities. And they saw it because, as you mentioned, it's very safe. People aren't going to fall when they walk in there. If I had a patient on there and they're walking at 50% body weight and they slip, the air would catch them, right? Versus if they're walking without anything, they could fall and hit the ground, right? So there are some special considerations, though, when you see these populations start using the Alter-G. And so as a team, we had to kind of think about, well, what do these populations need? And so there's one more video that I want you guys to just take a look at, and this is a stroke patient. So we'll just do a few seconds. I know we're getting close on time. Oh, I thought we were at 5:15. Okay. So you can see how hard it is for him to get in, but in a moment you'll see how nice he walks once he's in the Alter-G and his body weight is supported. So what we had to do, because he had the type of stroke that he has very poor trunk control. So we were concerned that he was going to lean his head into the control panel. So we had to strap him in initially to let him even use the Alter-G. Now he comes in and he doesn't use that anymore. And actually he doesn't come in a wheelchair from the car anymore. His wife just walks him in. He's improved his walking. So we didn't need to unweight him a lot, but we did need, again, that 0.1 increment. That was very important for this person. Say that again. So, yeah, so good point. So because of the bag and because of the air pressure or the bag that we needed to maintain the air pressure, he can't see his feet. So one thing that we did after he started using the Alter-G is we set up a video system for him. So we have a video system, which you'll see in a little bit. So then he can see his own foot placement. You see that monitor? So there's a camera inside the treadmill. There's also two external cameras so he can see from the rear and also from the side. So we can work on him walking straight without crossing his legs. We can work on step length, taking a bigger step. And then he was crossing his legs, so we taped the line down the middle of the bag and just told him, don't cross your legs. And he was able to kind of take that feedback, and it worked out well for him. This is at our headquarters in Fremont. Yeah, so we actually sell that as an accessory now. Yeah. So that's where, you know, again, as a company, you see the need, you know, as Doug mentioned, then you try and meet that need, and then you develop the product and you kind of bring it out to market. That was like his, no, it wasn't his first time. Maybe his fifth time or sixth time. Because the first time he didn't have the video. Yeah.
That was a project I worked at in the VA, stepping over virtual obstacles. For those folks, they didn't have to walk in a reduced gravity situation, so that so this product wouldn't really have helped them. They had problems in walking and stepping far enough and stepping over things. And so the project that I showed about stepping over virtual obstacles solve that problem for those people. But I can imagine there's people that need both. Or maybe one treatment could follow another. Maybe they do the anti-gravity treadmill first and then they do stepping over virtual boxes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now what we've added is a lift, we call it the lift access, or a support for patients that are like this stroke one, that are a little bit more deconditioned, maybe are a little bit more difficulty standing up, balancing, to help them get into the Alter G. Because we found that for those who had a really hard time because of gravity, once they got into our anti-gravity environment, it actually wasn't as difficult. So we had to kind of think about, well, how do we help them do that? Right? We had skilled nursing facilities that were using two therapists or three therapists to get one patient into the Alter G. Well, we thought it's got to be easier because, you know, they can't be grabbing all these staff members all the time to get someone in. So we came up with the lift access, and the main goals of the lift access are to increase patient safety so that those who are lower level, those who needed more assistance, could still take advantage of the differential air pressure. Therapists could be safe. So when I work with a patient, I'm always worried they're going to fall. So if they fall, sometimes I go with them. I might slow them down, but I'll go with them, and then I'll hurt my back or do something. And so we wanted to protect the therapist as well. And then the last thing is to think about, well, if they're in there like that stroke patient and he had no trunk control, if we could provide them something like this where they're supported and it could help them so they don't pitch forward so quickly or without control, that'll allow them again to take advantage of the Alter G. So the product is always evolving, and kind of what I wanted to highlight is, as it took you through all the different, you know, steps to this product now, is we learn from the market, we learn from the experts. So we had the idea initially, Sean Whalen had the idea, Robert Whalen, of the differential air pressure. Then as you take that, you know, to the company and the company takes it out to market, you learn from people in the field. And that's what we've done, you know, and just like anything, things are always evolving, right? Things look much different, you know, 10, 20 years down the line.
One design at the VA that had a bag around you, but it was able to move across the floor, so it had an interface with the floor. So it's like you were able to have this positive pressure pushing you up, but having the ability to move on the floor But, you know, you had the blower and you had to be plugged in and stuff, so it wasn't very practical at all. So I'm not sure it's a good solution.
Although now with advancements, maybe there's a, you know, good enough battery or, you know, things have advanced. I don't know. I'm not an engineer, but, you know, technology develops and you could, you know, come up with something like that in the future. Yeah. So technology products, they're always a work in progress. Is there a question in the back? Actually, one of the very early products was something they tested on kids. And we have studies that show it's very good for kids that have cerebral palsy because in that unweighted environment, they can really work on their stepping, their gait pattern. The one caveat right now for these units that we have out is there's a weight, there's a minimum weight requirement. And the reason is if they're too light, the machine doesn't calibrate.
Okay.
So the minimum is 80 pounds. The weight of the user,
okay.
So they know how much air to put in there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We haven't sold a lot into that. I mean, there's one out here at Lucille, Salter Packard, but they use it for their adolescents, and so there's not a whole need for the pediatric market at this point. We do have a pediatric prototype that's sitting at the headquarters. We don't really use it. We play around with it once in a while. So development relies on that team approach, as Doug mentioned. So we've got, you know, our product design team, which, you know, makes the product as it comes out to market look beautiful, you know, as you see in your pictures. You know, we could have something that's very rough, but if people buy it, they want something that looks nice, especially if it's in their physical therapy clinic and people are going to come in and see it. So we have a product design team, engineers, you know, always need for engineers because the technology is always evolving. And so mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, we even, you know, probably are looking to have some software engineers at some point because we're looking at some things for data collection in our units. So we can collect data like, you know, how much weight is someone putting on one leg versus the other, you know, how large are their steps. That's stuff that clinicians can use. The therapist can look at and say, well, you need to put more weight on your affected side or you need to take bigger steps because too small a step and you're a fall risk. So there's always going to be jobs. You know, we work with clinicians, other therapists in the field, end users, so we talk to patients a lot. How do the shorts feel? You know, one of the things we're coming out with now is performance shorts. We're going to have shorts that are a little bit more elastic, a little bit more comfortable, because those are kind of wetsuit material. So some people have complained that it doesn't feel too good, and it kind of gets real tight and compressive. So we're coming out with some performance shorts. So we always respond to what we hear. So, that's all I've got. Any questions?
I sort of have a comment. It's really good to see a product like this on the market and successful because I saw it in the very early stages, and that was so long ago, you know, you just had no idea if it was going to, you know, make it or not. We always, you know, work on things that we think are going to be commercially available. It's really good to see something actually, you know, make it. So, this is really good to see.
So to the first question, how heavy is it? It's about, this unit's about 750 pounds, I think, something like in that realm. So it's really hard to move. So if you put it in your clinic, you better pick where you want it, and it's going to stay there. Right? And the capacity, the weight limit capacity for people in there is 400 pounds. So you saw it on The Biggest Loser. We do have some facilities that use it for bariatric patients to help them lose weight. And if they're a little over 400, it's fine, because when we unweight them, they'll actually be below 400. And that limit is actually for the treadmill, not for the air pressure.
I have a question. How many staff are needed to run this? I mean, do you get people in there, and you give them a program to run, and the staff member could be occupied with something else?
Yeah, so you can do that. So some PT clinics will have people come in and they'll pay out of pocket to use it. So they just set themselves up. They might buy a pair of their own shorts so that we don't have to wash it in the clinic. So then they come in and they train on it. If it's a patient, you can have them do some exercises and then you can go start with another patient, right? So you can kind of dovetail treatments like that. Yeah. And then as far as your question about competitors, there is a product out in Japan, I believe, that also uses air pressure. But what they can't do, and what they were real smart with the patent, is that they patent the way that we calibrate it. So we have the technology to calibrate it a certain way. So even if they did the unweighting or unloading in Japan with air pressure, they couldn't get the precision that we have.
Yep. Any plans for a home market?
We get that question a lot. We're actually looking at that. The challenges are how do we, you know, adjust the cost for, you know, production. And as we get more units out there, then I'm sure that's going to help. At this point, I don't know how soon that's going to happen. So this unit here is $30,000. We manufacture everything now out of Fremont. Yeah. So this unit was started in Fremont. The other one we had had Woodway do it for a while, but now we brought everything in-house. So. How many do we produce per year? Well, total in the market now is about 800. Yeah. Our goal for this month is to do 12 a week. So, what's that, about 50 a month? Yeah.
So is it getting easier to sell up as more of them get out there and more people have experience, positive experience with them?
Absolutely. So people are getting the brand recognition now. You know, this is the only anti-gravity treadmill on the market. So when you talk to physical therapists, they recognize it. Triathletes know it, distance runners. We're getting a lot of play now in professional sports. Certain football player, which is going to be in the Super Bowl, has been using it. So, you know, we get things like that where, you know, it comes out in the media and people start seeing it and recognizing it. Not as far as I know. At this point, you know, everybody that purchases it, they do the electrical in their facility, and then, yeah.
How would one go about using this if you weren't doctor-prescribed rehab or on a professional athletic team? Is there some way to actually go try it?
So if you want to access one, you can use one at our headquarters, or you can, I'm sure, go to certain physical therapy clinics. PT Works in Los Altos, yep. So the easiest thing is that you go onto our website, there's a AlterG finder. So you just type in your zip code and it'll pop up all the AlterGs that are in your locale. And the majority of the ones in this area are actually on the peninsula. So if you live in this area, then there's quite a few. That's a very good question, because we have a lot of skilled nursing facilities and you know, rehab centers say, well, what if someone has a heart attack? What if someone, you know, something happens in there? It's actually really quick. You can unzip, you unlock the mechanism, you bring it down. It's a matter of 10, 15 seconds.
So
Well, it'll stay pressurized for a little bit to support the patient, but as soon as you unzip and break the seal and all the air comes out, yeah, then that's it. Yeah, we're looking into that. We're trying to do an obesity study, so get some data on that as to how much it benefits that population. So, yeah, good thoughts.
Yeah.
For stress testing? For cardiac?
Because I cannot get on the regular treadmill. And then also,
You can. It won't interfere. The challenge we have when talking to cardiologists is they like their rehab treadmills because they're pre-programmed, right? So you go a certain amount of time, then it goes speed, then it goes incline, right? It's because you're testing your heart rate. The problem is we don't have the programs for that yet. We can. Yeah, so we talked to cardiologists, but they want something that's more, you know, automatic. And so we're trying to accommodate them. Yeah.
Let's give a